escuelas oficiales de idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias, pruebas de certificación de nivel avanzado C1 de inglés, convocatoria ordinaria de 2024, prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta parte consta de 3 tareas. Escuchará cada grabación 2 veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícela según se indica. Solo se admitirán respuestas en tinta negra o azul. Las tareas escritas a lápiz no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso de cualquier dispositivo electrónico queda prohibido durante toda la prueba. El móvil tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. Atención, no escriba en los recuadros sombreados. Son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to an interview with actor and filmmaker Viggo Mortensen and match questions A to J to his answers 1 to 6. There are 3 questions that you do not need. Write your answers in the table provided. Question 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute to read the task. Example.
I don't know. Maybe, I think probably what would have happened is I would have got tired of the whole circus. Now, you know, I've had a chance over the years to learn how to do the job, make mistakes on film, but in roles that not so many people saw. And by the time I got attention and the others and Lord of the Rings got all that attention, I don't know if I was ready for it, but I understood that, well, you know,
One.
You know, I don't really separate them. They're all the same thing. I don't think children separate different artistic... They don't separate themselves either. They don't say as adults do, well, there are artists and then there are other people. Kids, if they want to draw, they draw. They want to sing, they sing. They want to pretend they're the Lone Ranger or Aragorn or an elf or a monster. They just do it. They don't think about it. It's only adults that make that distinction. And I think that everybody, even when they grow up, is an artist. It's just a way of living.
Two.
Well, a lot of times the violence expressed on screen is a metaphor for what's going on inside. It has to do with things other than the actual violence. But I take it seriously, and I respect directors who, if you're going to depict violence, who do it responsibly. They don't dress it up. They don't make it look like some beautiful choreographed dance. It's brutal, and it has serious consequences. It's not a game, even though it's make-believe. It's not really, it's not funny to me.
Three.
And there are a lot of directors who are very talented who kind of make too much of a joke out of it sometimes, or too much of a stylized exercise that removes it, you know. It's too easy. It lets the audience off the hook. I like movies that pull me in, movies that I believe, movies that when they end, I wonder what's going to happen next, where there's something to talk about.
Four.
It was painful.
Was it?
And, you know, once we got going, it wasn't really about being embarrassed or any of that. It was just, let's make it work and hopefully nobody gets hurt too much. And I really was being thrown around, and it was painful, and I knew it would be. I just figured the sooner it's over with, the better.
Five.
It depends, you know. I'm flattered that there will be people from Germany and Japan that will show up when I have a photo exhibition in Iceland or a movie premiere in Spain. Yeah, of course it's flattering, but sometimes I worry about it. I say, well, you guys could have waited till a movie came out in Japan. Every once in a while, there'll be a person who steps over the line, though, in a way where they assume that I'm only speaking to them. Even some people that take it a step further and assume that I'm in a relationship with them. I worry about them, and sometimes I worry about myself.
Six.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. You know, it's part of who you are. Where did you come from? Proust. And he said something that I think is really true. He said that wisdom is not something that one receives. It is something that one discovers for oneself on a journey that no one can take for us and no one can spare us. And I think that's pretty good. Life is a game that keeps moving. You know, even as you're playing it, the rules change all the time. And you got to be flexible.
Listen again. Example.
I don't know. Maybe, I think probably what would have happened is I would have got tired of the whole circus. Now, you know, I've had a chance over the years to learn how to do the job, make mistakes on film, but in roles that not so many people saw. And by the time I got attention and the others and Lord of the Rings got all that attention, I don't know if I was ready for it, but I understood that, well, you know,
one.
You know, I don't really separate them. They're all the same thing. I don't think children separate different artistic... They don't separate themselves either. They don't say, as adults do, well, there are artists and then there are other people. Kids, if they want to draw, they draw. They want to sing, they sing. They want to pretend they're the Lone Ranger or Aragorn or an elf or a monster. They just do it. They don't think about it. It's only adults that make that distinction. And I think that everybody, even when they grow up, is an artist. It's just a way of living.
Two.
Well, a lot of times the violence expressed on screen is a metaphor for what's going on inside. It has to do with things other than the actual violence. But I take it seriously, and I respect directors who, if you're going to depict violence, who do it responsibly. They don't dress it up. They don't make it look like some beautiful choreographed dance. It's brutal, and it has serious consequences. It's not a game, even though it's make-believe. It's not really, it's not funny to me.
Three.
And there are a lot of directors who are very talented who kind of make too much of a joke out of it sometimes, or too much of a stylized exercise that removes it, you know. It's too easy. It lets the audience off the hook. I like movies that pull me in, movies that I believe, movies that when they end, I wonder what's going to happen next, where there's something to talk about.
Four.
It was painful.
Was it?
And, you know, once we got going, it wasn't really about being embarrassed or any of that. It was just, let's make it work and hopefully nobody gets hurt too much. And I really was being thrown around, and it was painful. And I knew it would be. I just figured the sooner it's over with, the better.
Five.
It depends, you know. I'm flattered that there will be people from Germany and Japan that will show up when I have a photo exhibition in Iceland or a movie premiere in Spain. Yeah, of course it's flattering. But sometimes I worry about it. I say, well, you guys could have waited till a movie came out in Japan. Every once in a while, there'll be a person who steps over the line, though, in a way where they assume that I'm only speaking to them. Even some people that take it a step further and assume that I'm in a relationship with them. I worry about them, and sometimes I worry about myself.
Six.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. You know, it's part of who you are. Where did you come from? Proust. And he said something that I think is really true. He said that wisdom is not something that one receives. It is something that one discovers for oneself on a journey that no one can take for us and no one can spare us. And I think that's pretty good. Life is a game that keeps moving. You know, even as you're playing it, the rules change all the time. And you got to be flexible.
This is the end of task one. Now turn to task two. Task two. Listen to a talk about being an introvert. For questions 1 to 9, choose the best options A, B, or C. Write your answers in the table provided. Question 0 is an example. Now you have 2 minutes to read the task.
I'm here today trying to be something I'm not, which is something I've been trying to do for 2 years now. Write a TED talk, share my ideas, talk in front of such a large group of people. Now, I know a lot of you are probably thinking, she sounds a bit shy, or maybe she probably gets nervous easily. Yeah, all of those things are 100% true, but why? To answer simply, I am an introvert. So what is an introvert? An introvert is a quiet person that doesn't like to talk very much and likes to keep their thoughts mostly to themselves. They're the kind of person that goes home just to relax and have time to think. But that's not to say that an outgoing person can't be an introvert. Just as long as they enjoy the quiet time they get to themselves, they're most likely an introvert to a certain extent. So the main thing I want to address in this talk is that there's nothing wrong with being an introvert. However, society doesn't see it in the same lighting. Society has taught us that being an introvert is the worst thing you can be and that everyone should want to be extroverted. We're told that being outgoing is good and being shy and quiet is bad. We're told in elementary school we have to raise our hands, participate in class, or we lose marks. Every year at parent-teacher interviews, my parents would hear the same thing. Your daughter is very shy. She needs to learn to speak up more. I was told to share my voice whenever possible. As an introvert, those are some very hard standards to achieve. This is why I joined the TED Ed Club 2 years ago, to prove to not only myself, but to everyone, that I wasn't shy. I could write a talk just like everyone else is doing it. No big deal. Slight problem, I never wrote a talk. I couldn't come up with a topic I was truly passionate about that I felt like I wanted to share with the world. I would show up to every meeting and watch my peers continue to develop their talks, and I would get frustrated with myself. Why could they share their ideas so easily and I couldn't even come up with a topic? Now, looking back, I realize I have passions, I have views on the world, and I have opinions. I just didn't want to share any of them because I'm an introvert. But is there anything wrong with that? Statistics say that 50% of the American population is made up of introverts. So society is telling 50% of Americans, about 160 million people, that they need to change who they are to be accepted, to be successful, and to be happy. Keep in mind, within this large group of introverts are people such as Elton John, Emma Watson, Michael Jordan, Audrey Hepburn, Albert Einstein, and so many more incredible, inspiring people. Do you think being an introvert has ever stopped any of them from achieving their goals or being happy? No. A lot of you have probably been told something along the lines of, why be a follower when you can be a leader? But what about every leader needs a follower? Let's look at Mr. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada. Do you think he'd be where he is today without the support of the people? If everyone was trying to be a leader, no one would truly succeed, as it's the followers that define a true leader. But that's not to say that an introvert can't be a leader. Let's look at Abraham Lincoln, Rosa Parks, and Gandhi. All incredible, inspirational leaders, and all introverts. In a business setting, the CEO of a company will look at an introvert and say, if they're not going to share their ideas, they're useless to me. Well, guess what? These companies are missing out. Introverts are known to be versatile, responsible, work well in small groups, and individually. So being an introvert has no effect on how happy or how successful you're going to be as long as you see it in the right lighting. If you see yourself as an introvert and think it's the worst thing in the world, you're never going to be truly happy with yourself. And you're going to constantly try to change to conform to society. But if you accept yourself as an introvert and you're happy, there's nothing in the way of you achieving your goals and getting what you want. All in all, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being an introvert. No matter what society may say, you don't need to change who you are because being an introvert's great. Before I leave, I want to end with a quote from the book Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain. The secret to life is to put yourself in the right lighting. For some, it's a Broadway spotlight. For others, it's a lamplit desk. So the next time you see that quiet kid in the back of the class doesn't participate very much, I want you to think, I wonder what great things they're going to come up with next. Thank you.
Listen again.
I'm here today trying to be something I'm not, which is something I've been trying to do for 2 years now. Write a TED Talk, share my ideas, talk in front of such a large group of people. Now, I know a lot of you are probably thinking, she sounds a bit shy, or maybe she probably gets nervous easily. Yeah, all of those things are 100% true, but why? To answer simply, I am an introvert. So what is an introvert? An introvert is a quiet person that doesn't like to talk very much and likes to keep their thoughts mostly to themselves. They're the kind of person that goes home just to relax and have time to think. But that's not to say that an outgoing person can't be an introvert. Just as long as they enjoy the quiet time they get to themselves, they're most likely an introvert to a certain extent. So the main thing I want to address in this talk is that there's nothing wrong with being an introvert. However, society doesn't see it in the same lighting. Society has taught us that being an introvert is the worst thing you can be, and that everyone should want to be extroverted. We're told that being outgoing is good, and being shy and quiet is bad. We're told, in elementary school, we have to raise our hands, participate in class, or we lose marks. Every year at parent-teacher interviews, my parents would hear the same thing. Your daughter is very shy. She needs to learn to speak up more. I was told to share my voice whenever possible. As an introvert, those are some very hard standards to achieve. This is why I joined the TED Ed Club 2 years ago. To prove to not only myself, but to everyone, that I wasn't shy. I could write a talk just like everyone else is doing it. No big deal. Slight problem, I never wrote a talk. I couldn't come up with a topic I was truly passionate about that I felt like I wanted to share with the world. I would show up to every meeting and watch my peers continue to develop their talks, and I would get frustrated with myself. Why could they share their ideas so easily and I couldn't even come up with a topic? Now, looking back, I realize I have passions, I have views on the world, and I have opinions. I just didn't want to share any of them because I'm an introvert. But is there anything wrong with that? Statistics say that 50% of the American population is made up of introverts. So society is telling 50% of Americans, about 160 million people, that they need to change who they are to be accepted, to be successful, and to be happy. Keep in mind, within this large group of introverts are people such as Elton John, Emma Watson, Michael Jordan, Audrey Hepburn, Albert Einstein, and so many more incredible, inspiring people. Do you think being an introvert has ever stopped any of them from achieving their goals or being happy? No. A lot of you have probably been told something along the lines of, why be a follower when you can be a leader? But what about every leader needs a follower? Let's look at Mr. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada. Do you think he'd be where he is today without the support of the people? If everyone was trying to be a leader, no one would truly succeed, as it's the followers that define a true leader. But that's not to say that an introvert can't be a leader. Let's look at Abraham Lincoln, Rosa Parks, and Gandhi. All incredible, inspirational leaders, and all introverts. In a business setting, the CEO of a company will look at an introvert and say, if they're not going to share their ideas, they're useless to me. Well, guess what? These companies are missing out. Introverts are known to be versatile, responsible, work well in small groups, and individually. So being an introvert has no effect on how happy or how successful you're going to be as long as you see it in the right lighting. If you see yourself as an introvert and think it's the worst thing in the world, you're never going to be truly happy with yourself, and you're going to constantly try to change to conform to society. But if you accept yourself as an introvert and you're happy, there's nothing in the way of you achieving your goals and getting what you want. All in all, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being an introvert. No matter what society may say, you don't need to change who you are, because being an introvert's great. Before I leave, I want to end with a quote from the book Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain. The secret to life is to put yourself in the right lighting. For some, it's a Broadway spotlight. For others, it's a lamplit desk. So the next time you see that quiet kid in the back of the class doesn't participate very much, I want you to think, I wonder what great things they're going to come up with next. Thank you.
This is the end of task 2. Now turn to task 3. Task 3. Listen to a conversation between two people about the improvements made to the 911 system, the line for emergency calls in the US. Decide if the sentences 1 to 10 are true or false according to the conversation. Write your answers T, true, or F, false in the table provided. Sentence 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the task.
We've had cell phones for a long time. We've had smartphones for well over a decade, but it sounds like it's a pretty complicated process. What's the latest?
AT&T announced that by the end of this month, it's going to be transitioning its technology so that when you're using a phone that uses AT&T to call 911, that call will use the location data that your phone creates to make sure that that call goes to the right 911 operator. Right now, one of the big challenges with cell phone calls to 911 is that they'll often just go to just a nearby cell tower, and that doesn't necessarily mean that that's cell tower is going to be connected to the right jurisdiction, the right 911 operator for that particular call. This wasn't a problem with landlines because it was all predetermined and hooked up with very specific phone towers. So those 911 calls would always go to the right place. But with cell phones, that's just something that doesn't really happen. And you know, now we need to tackle the problem of all these misdirected 911 calls, which can, you know, cost precious time during an emergency.
Okay, so pretty soon AT&T is going to be sending out more detailed location information. What are the other companies doing? You mentioned other carriers and also some of the phone hardware companies.
T-Mobile is also rolling out this kind of location-based routing. The experts I spoke to for this piece said that eventually this should sort of be how cell phone calls to 911 are routed. But at the same time, Apple and Google, which are designing the operating systems in your phones, are sort of building new technology to share even more information with an emergency responder when an emergency is happening. So one big example of this is you can take your health app and pre-design it or preset it to send certain health information, like whether you're allergic to certain medications or a condition that you might have, directly to an EMT or through 911. So that information is pre-sent. So that's one of the big updates that's happening. The federal government is also involved in this big transformation called Next Generation 911. And that's supposed to be about, you know, making sure you can text 911, send images and videos to 911, and you're not just limited to calling 911 in an emergency. And that's something that's been slowly transitioning across the country.
Okay, well, I could see the location information being super helpful. That makes perfect sense. If I'm in a car accident and I call 911, they'd want to know exactly where I am so they could get to me more quickly. But I don't know, giving up access to my medical information, my texts, images, I could see how that could be concerning to people.
there is just broadly some privacy concerns here with making it easier for this kind of information to be shared with 911. You could imagine a situation where maybe you would want an EMT to have your health information, but you wouldn't necessarily want a cop to have that. And it's not really clear how we would handle that kind of situation as sort of 911 gets more advanced. You know, at the same time, there's concern that, you know, maybe this data could be hacked, or, you know, once it's created, someone could try to get it, or maybe that other federal agencies that aren't necessarily meant to be responding to emergencies could, you know, get the data that's created by these kind of advancements. 911 call centers are operated differently throughout the country, which makes this really complicated. But the person who's deciding who's getting dispatched when you make a 911 call is not you. It can be one of the people receiving the call or making that decision. That raises questions. We have, you know, a lot of real problems with over-policing and racist police violence in the United States. And 911, you know, plays a significant sort of role in that. And the question of how this data might exacerbate a lot of these problems is something that's really, really important to think about.
And as these new programs roll out from the carrier specifically, is there any oversight on any of this?
It's a really weird hodgepodge, like I said. So the FCC creates standards for how the service providers have to operate and what kind of information they need to be able to provide. But the actual operation of these centers, for instance, whether or not a 911 center has next generation 911, which, like I said, is being able to accept texts and data messages, that's something that's handled on the local level. Like, there's no official center of 911 in the US that says the 911 centers all need to do this thing and this thing and this thing. It's really quite different throughout the country.
You also mentioned that some of this is already happening. Where do things stand right now with 911?
We have some places where you can text 911, some places where you cannot. If you have AT&T, you're supposed to be having your 911 calls routed with that location information by the end of June. If T-Mobile, it's sort of a more gradual process. Verizon, I don't believe, has done anything similar to this. You know, as that next generation 911 system is already being rolled out, Google and Apple are developing software that can sort of handle that. So once you for instance, create a procedure for your phone to be able to text 911 that allows Apple to design software that automatically uses that technology to send your health information. So it's all sort of a gradual process that's being done on top of the technology changes that the 911 call centers are making.
So it's in the works on the device level. Specifically, Google and Apple are working on the next generation of 911, but that stuff is going to come in software updates in the future.
It's a bunch of different companies are active in this. There's the companies that are making the hardware that creates this data. There's the software that can send it. There's the companies providing the call service. And then there's the 911 centers receiving the call. So all of those different actors are kind of playing a role in modernizing this system.
How robust do you see the pushback being here, especially from like the privacy advocates you mentioned earlier?
There was one expert I spoke to who said one of the arguments for just improving the 911 system in general is to make sure that the people responding to a situation are better informed and don't have such limited information, and that could save lives and be really important. At the same time, there aren't great protections on location data in general, and this sort of raises the same kind of concern that privacy experts have already had, which is, are we making it easier for governments to get this kind of information? You know, one of the scenarios that kept coming up in my calls is, you know, on the one hand, like, maybe you would want someone to know that you'd like recently had an abortion if you were an EMT, but right now that might not be such good information to automatically share with an EMT on your phone if it could also go to a cop, right? Those are the kind of trade-offs that some of the privacy experts I spoke to are thinking about.
Well, like a lot of things with the future of technology, it sounds kind of equal parts promising and daunting. Rebecca, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Listen again.
We've had cell phones for a long time. We've had smartphones for well over a decade, but it sounds like it's a pretty complicated process. What's the latest?
AT&T announced that by the end of this month, it's going to be transitioning its technology so that when you're using a phone that uses AT&T to call 911, that call will use the location data that your phone creates to make sure that that call goes to the right 911 operator. Right now, one of the big challenges with cell phone calls to 911 is that they'll often just go to just a nearby cell tower, and that doesn't necessarily mean that that cell tower is going to be connected to the right jurisdiction, the right 911 operator for that particular call. This wasn't a problem with landlines because it was all predetermined and hooked up with very specific phone towers. So those 911 calls would always go to the right place. But with cell phones, that's just something that doesn't really happen. And you know, now we need to tackle the problem of all these misdirected 911 calls, which can, you know, cost precious time during an emergency.
Okay, so pretty soon AT&T is going to be sending out more detailed location information. What are the other companies doing? You mentioned other carriers and also some of the phone hardware companies.
T-Mobile is also rolling out this kind of location-based routing. The experts I spoke to for this piece said that eventually this should sort of be how cell phone calls to 911 are routed. But at the same time, Apple and Google, which are designing the operating systems in your phones, are sort of building new technology to share even more information with an emergency responder when an emergency is happening. So one big example of this is you can take your health app and pre-design it or preset it to send certain health information like whether you're allergic to certain medications or a condition that you might have directly to an EMT or through 911. So that information is pre-sent. So that's one of the big updates that's happening. The federal government is also involved in this big transformation called Next Generation 911. And that's supposed to be about, you know, making sure you can text 911, send images and videos to 911, and you're not just limited to calling 911 in an emergency. And that's something that's been slowly transitioning across the country.
Okay, well, I could see the location information being super helpful. That makes perfect sense. If I'm in a car accident and I call 911, they'd want to know exactly where I am so they could get to me more quickly. But I don't know, giving up access to my medical information, my texts, images, I could see how that could be concerning to people.
There is just broadly some privacy concerns here with making it easier for this kind of information to be shared with 911. You could imagine a situation where maybe you would want an EMT to have your health information, but you wouldn't necessarily want a cop to have that. And it's not really clear how we would handle that kind of situation as sort of 911 gets more advanced. You know, at the same time, there's concern that, you know, maybe this data could be hacked or, you know, once it's created, someone could try to get it, or maybe that other federal agencies that aren't necessarily meant to be responding to emergencies could, you know, get the data that's created by these kind of advancements. 911 call centers are operated differently throughout the country, which makes this really complicated. But the person who's deciding who's getting dispatched when you make a 911 call is not you. It can be one of the people receiving the call or making that decision. That raises questions. We have, you know, a lot of real problems with over-policing and racist police violence in the United States. And 911, you know, plays a significant sort of role in that. And the question of how this data might exacerbate a lot of these problems is something that's really, really important to think about.
And as these new programs roll out from the carrier specifically, is there any oversight on any of this?
It's a really weird hodgepodge, like I said. So the FCC creates standards for how the service providers have to operate and what kind of information they need to be able to provide. But the actual operation of these centers, for instance, whether or not a 911 center has next generation 911, which, like I said, is being able to accept texts and data messages, that's something that's handled on the local level. Like, there's no official center of 911 in the U.S. that says the 911 centers all need to do this thing and this thing and this thing. It's really quite different throughout the country.
You also mentioned that some of this is already happening. Where do things stand right now with 911?
We have some places where you can text 911, some places where you cannot. You have AT&T, you're supposed to be having your 911 calls routed with that location information by the end of June. If T-Mobile, it's sort of a more gradual process. Verizon, I don't believe, has done anything similar to this. You know, as that next generation 911 system is already being rolled out, Google and Apple are developing software that can sort of handle that. So once you, you know, for instance, create a procedure for your phone to be able to text 911, find one that allows Apple to design software that automatically uses that technology to send your health information. So it's all sort of a gradual process that's being done on top of the technology changes that the 911 call centers are making.
So it's in the works on the device level. Specifically, Google and Apple are working on the next generation of 911, but that stuff is going to come in software updates in the future.
It's a bunch of different companies are active in this. There's the companies that are making the hardware that creates this data. There's the software that can send it. There's the companies providing the call service. And then there's the 911 centers receiving the call. So all of those different actors are kind of playing a role in modernizing this system.
How robust do you see the pushback being here, especially from like the privacy advocates you mentioned earlier?
There was one expert I spoke to who said one of the arguments for just improving the 911 system in general is to make sure that the people responding to a situation are better informed and don't have such limited information, and that could save lives and be really important at the same time. There aren't great protections on location data in general, and this sort of raises the same kind of concern that privacy experts have already had, which is, are we making it easier for governments to get this kind of information? You know, one of the scenarios that kept coming up in my calls is, you know, on the one hand, like maybe you would want someone to know that you'd like recently had an abortion if you were an EMT, but right now that might not be such good information to automatically share with an EMT on your phone if it could also go to a cop, right? Those are the kind of trade-offs that some of the privacy experts I've spoke to are thinking about.
Well, like a lot of things with the future of technology, it sounds kind of equal parts promising and daunting. Rebecca, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is the end of task 3 and the end of the listening test.